You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Woodman Corner, the West Bromwich Albion podcast that is trying to pretend we are hopeful about staying up. Thank you for joining us again this week. My name's Graham Brown. I am with Joe Chapman.
How are you, Graham?
Well, yeah.
I mean, kind of, yeah, in life.
Remove
the West Bromwich Albion.
What a weird day. What I should say is we are going to come on to rank Nicky Hammond's 14 best buys. But in answer to the question, what an obscure day Saturday was. My heart almost burst out of my chest with pride at the things we did to honour Silveridge. I'm not one to get carried away about the kind of personality, but I've just got so much time for Silveridge. And yet, I just felt like the heart and soul was ripped out of me in that game. I don't know, how did you find it?
It was a confusing afternoon of emotions, I think. As you say, you're so proud of how the club put together such a fantastic and fitting tribute for Cyril and everybody that was in attendance. And it made for a very, very emotional afternoon. There were a lot of tears being shed when Andy Williams was playing on the big screen,
yeah,
with Cyril's montage of goals and special moments, and it was I suppose to a point you can just say, well, the club have done everything they can do.
They've
provided this platform, which then for the players to go out and perform, they had the fans right behind them from the off. They gave themselves a head start 5 minutes in.
I think the club have been an absolute class act with Regis. But it's funny, I keep getting the same thing about everyone saying, oh, it's Astledale over again. Well, I mean, for me, it was never anywhere near as emotionally charged Astledale as Saturday was. And it wasn't like when we lost to Leicester, it meant we were odds on to be relegated, I've just never ever known that kind of slide down. But
it was galling that day, Leicester, wasn't it? It was a last minute.
Yeah, it was annoying.
A last minute defeat, and it was a real kick in the teeth because we all realised how special a day it was and the breakthrough that family had, and we were celebrating Jeff's life. But I suppose, you know, the thing with Cyril was it was because of his death and how sudden it was and how much of a shock it was to everybody connected with the club. It was still very, very raw and very fresh in the minds of all the fans that were there.
So talk to us about the 90 minutes. I mean, how would you categorise it?
Well, I mean, very much like that Astle day, you know, they went out there and they give themselves a lead. But they just didn't push on. They had another chance from another set piece. But regards to open play, the opportunities were very, very thin on the ground. Daniel Sturridge looked lively every time he had the ball at his feet, but he didn't have the ball at his feet anywhere near enough to what we'd like to have seen.
Chris, still got hopes for him.
So do I. There was one particular moment when Brunt played a ball into Sturridge over the top, and Sturridge laid it off to Phillips, and Phillips, it blasted, opened up for him, and all he had to do was just, you know, dart and attack his defender.
Or lay Sturridge in. Sturridge had fans, basically.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, actually, that there was two or three times I thought that Sturridge was too smart for the people around him, where you could see his movement was great, but
yes,
and he was linking it up great.
Rather than, you know, put it into the top tier of the Smedic, that's, you know, kind of just all you have to do is just compose yourself.
I can't fight this back. I'm going to have to say this. And I mean, anyone who cares to look back at my Twitter timeline can see that I felt this before the game. That game for me was lost the second they picked that team. When you've got a four-man midfield, you don't pick a 37-year-old and a holding midfielder that can't run more than 6 or 7 kilometres in a game. You just don't do that. And I mean, Lamina, actually, as it happened, was the player The best 90 minutes I've seen this season pre this game was Lamina. I'm sure he's not that good every game, but it just so happens I knew he had him. And again, he ran riot on it. But people talk about it like he's brilliant, which I think he is a good player. The fact of the matter is, he had nothing to play against. It was a catastrophic form of midfield. And I understand, and I would contest that you couldn't have answered it by just replacing Jakob with Field. It needed a structural change. So should have got five men in there. We just didn't have the legs to play four midfield, and it was absolutely asking for
they've
it.
It's been a different dynamic in recent weeks when they've been playing with a four, because it's easy to ask Rodriguez to drop in onto the wing when Albion don't have the ball.
Yeah, it's looked good.
And for Brunt to come in and join Barry and Krakowiak, and it's kind of like this without kind of going venturing back into Tony Pulis land, it was kind of like that swivel that, you know, they talked about, kind of being able to move from side to side, from a four to a five, from a four to a five, depending on when you got the ball or not. And with Rondon and Sturridge, both of them very, very much out and out number nines, he never really had that. It was a very, very flat 4-4-2.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a point that I think Pardew deserves credit for, which is I've thought that the fluidity of Rodriguez working in a four has been great, and I think he's really, really performed terrifically coming back, and obviously that was lost. But it is a massive, massive, massive red light flashing for me now, that team selection, because it just couldn't have worked. I can't fathom what that... Actually, the best case scenario is you score early... You sit back with your two holding midfielders and you break, with Sturridge and Phillips.
Yep.
But we didn't even do that. I actually thought it was all going to fall into place. It was a car crash of a selection for me that was partly justifiable by having some real talent missing. But it was I would love to see the justification for why anyone would ever play Jakob and Barrett.
Field was the only real option. Other than the two that he played, obviously to come in and alongside.
Yeah.
And Phil can do that role where he plays on the left and then tucks inside without the ball. We saw that at Wembley. He did it well. We saw that against Newcastle.
Phil would have been... For me, it'd be
precious
Field,
little of him since.
It'd be either Field or bringing Brunt in like full times playing through. I'd have gone with Field and potentially drop Brunt. I mean, I'd certainly found a way of getting Sturridge into the team. I sympathise with him. I just feel like... I hope it was known tactical naivety, but either way, it was just gutting. Anyway, yeah, we should probably move on from Southampton.
Yes.
I am still feeling
just a small matter of Chelsea to come.
Okay, so next, let's get on to the main thrust of this week's podcast. We're going to be taking a look at the Albion signings across what we're calling the Nicky Hammond era since he's joined the club. A disclaimer at this point: I think everyone listening to this probably knows that. Certainly Tony Pulis had more than a hand in a lot of the signings. So this is really talking about an era of time more than anything. But, you know, we do... Nicky Hammond is a director, so he's accountable. So, you know, we'll be considering what the upshot is of his era has been. But just to keep West Bromwich Albion at bay, to be absolutely clear, we're not handing all blame/praise for every West Bromwich Albion signing over to Nicky Hammond. Many of you might have seen this. We put our Playbus poll out there this week that gives you the opportunity to rank the 14 signings that Albion have had under the management of Nicky Hammond. So this is going back a couple of years now. And the responses have been really, really interesting. What we're going to do, we'll take it through one after the other so we can kind of talk them through. And maybe at the end, we'll discuss what our top and bottom three would be, because I think it's safe to say that both Joe and I wouldn't actually probably agree with what the end up shot was. So we're going to go from 14 to 1 here. We're going to start off with a player that was ranked the lowest by Albion fans on this play buzz. And it's surprise number 14 when you consider some of the other people in here. The person that had the lowest ranking was Nasser Chadli. Joe, justify why that was.
I think there's an element of frustration. You know, Nasser Chadli is with add-ons and everything else is pretty much the record signing the club's ever made.
Yeah,
and we've seen precious little of him certainly since Alan Pardew came in. We were talking minutes rather than matches, and of course even under Tony Pulis, we all know he had his differences in the first half of the season. So this season has been almost a write-off for Chadli. Really, last season he started like a house on fire. Between the kind of months of September and November, he looked fantastic. He was scoring goals. He was playing a really, really significant role in the team. But for that really, really annoying injury that he picked up and required surgery on, he never came back that same player. He never hit the ground running. And when pre-season came around, as we all know, and he didn't go to Austria, he really could have done with that as a real kind of opportunity to build his fitness back up total to 100% and go again. But it's been really, really annoying, actually. We know he's in our ranks. We know the quality that he has, but what have we got to show for it over two years?
I think that's right. I think it's a protest vote, but for me, I mean, he's not down there for me. I understand the cost and so on, but you've got to give him the ultimate justification. He's an attacking midfielder that was playing in a Tony Pulis team.
Yeah,
you know, he was never really going to give an A yet. He's going to be given a fair crack of the whip, and I think, I look forward to him coming back and having the opportunity with, if it's not too late, you know, with Belgium coming up, to play a part in a team that actually plays a bit of football going forward.
Yeah.
For me, he wouldn't be number 14, but as it happens, 189 people voted him up, 338 yeah. voted him down.
So obviously there's a disclaimer here that everybody that voted hasn't voted for every player.
Yeah, that's
so, it's, you know, people can pick and choose who they vote for, and for that reason.
It's a ratio anyway, and he had the lowest ratio of positives and negatives. So next up, 13, this is what I'm not going to disagree with, Hal Robson-Koerner.
It's pretty damning. I mean, compared to the two names that are above him in the list.
Yep.
Again, he's had nowhere near as many kind of, you know, negative votes as Chadley has. But I'm not sure. I don't think Robson-Koerner was helped by just the fact that upon arrival, he was written off as a poor signing.
Yeah.
He came in on deadline day in 2016. He was one of he was the last signing of that window. Of course, Nicky Hammond knew him already from his time at Reading. And okay, I get it. I totally get it. It's anything but a signing to inspire a free agent who's just been released by a Championship club. And last season, he chipped in with a couple of goals. He was never ever really. He never had a run in the side. He never started any particular amount of games in a row or anything like that. He scored a couple of goals, and yeah, I mean,
he's a poster boy for a regime that didn't have any hope of progress. Really, I mean, his signing was really, really disappointing to me. As you say, he was never a successful Championship striker. He was signed because he was available and he was free. And you know, for one of the 30 richest clubs in the country, you know, that's not really good enough. And I mean, meanwhile, you know, he's been given a new contract since, which to me smacks of laziness of not replacing him, really.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you'd imagine, for argument's sake, West Bromwich Albion are in the Championship this time next season.
Yep.
Hal Robson-Koerner is going to lead the line. As of based on the fact that you can't see Salomon Rondon playing the Championship, remains to be seen what would happen with Jay Rodriguez. Hal Robson-Koerner is a player that's played in the Championship already. Is he going to get you 20 goals?
I think that's a really interesting goals? Point, because I mean, if Albion were to get relegated and they start with Hal Robson-Koerner, they then get promoted again. Hmm. I'd be staggered if Hal Robson-Koerner ever routinely starts games for the Albion. I think it's and what's more, I would be staggered if anyone wanted to buy him when we went down.
Might give him a new deal.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a substitute if we're in the Championship. I mean, history says that when you get down to the Championship, you spend a little bit of money. Mm. There's going to be a lot of players go because of the flex downs and so on. So the next two we'll probably race through because they're probably slightly less important.
Well, again, very much like I was talking about Chadley earlier, this is a minutes over matches thing for these two players. They enjoyed precious game time while they were at the Albion. They're both loan signings, both stop gaps, I suppose. Both under Tony Pulis, and both left back, centre backs. One was Brendan Galloway, and the other was Mark Wilson.
I don't really need to dwell too much on that, but to say that, you know, it's a Tony Pulis trait to loan players and not pick them.
It was bare minimum. Wilson did okay.
But Wilson wasn't there. Wilson wasn't loaned to play, was he? Was there in case anyone gets injured?
Exactly, and I think he realised that. And the first thing he said when he arrived at the club, I remember in January was last January was, I'm here to earn a permanent deal. He was never ever going to have enough time.
Meanwhile,
to prove that.
18 months later,
he played for Sunderland.
Five out of 159 Albion fans ranked him as good. The next one is probably a good one for us to chat through.
This is an interesting one.
So Oliver Burke had 162 positive votes and 250 negative votes. Joe, you've seen a lot of the Albion. What have you seen of Oliver Burke?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you could have seen every minute of Albion home and away this season and still claim you hadn't seen much of Oliver Burke, really. Yeah. He's been in and out of the squad, never mind the starting 11 under Alan Pardew, who has opted for experience, because the same could be said for Sam Field, who on occasion has been left out of the side. And yet you can see why you get excited by the introduction. I think he's a very, very decent player off the bench.
Yeah.
He started against Man United. I thought he did okay. He lost the ball a few times in dangerous areas against United and, you know, played a part in being at fault for the goals that they scored in the first half. So he's a very, very nippy player. But he's also got a bit about him. He's tall.
Yeah.
He's bulky. He's not, you know, skinny and easy to nudge off the ball. I think he's got a hell of a lot of development to do still.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think he's a player that was signed by Pulis, and I would imagine Pulis would have had a long regime.
Looks questionable. 15 million quid for a winger. He's 20
yeah,
years old.
It's absolute at best questionable. You know, I mean, realistically, you know, it's up for debate whether or not he's going to ever get a top flight career. So I mean, it's a hell of a lot of money to spend. I think Pulis would have tried to kind of build him into a sort of more effective James McLean. I think actually, I've seen one or two things about Burke. Some decent movement, blah blah blah. I don't know whether you agree. I wonder if Burke is ever going to be a success. He'll be turned into a striker.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? He proved that okay at Championship level. But he proved that he can score goals in the Championship with Nottingham Forest. And in the short time that he was in the first team there before he got picked up by Leipzig, he managed that. So I don't think he'd have a problem. Again, you know, we're talking hypothetically. I don't want to kind of go too early on this. But if Albion are in the Championship next season, I can see Oliver Burke being a relative success.
Well, yeah, I hope. Unfortunately, you might well get to see that. Okay, next on the list is, and so we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Coming in at 9th is Alan Nyon. I've got a feeling this might have been different had we done it this time last year. What do you think of Alan Nyon as a signing?
Yeah, very much so. I think it's a pertinent point you make. I think that when he was unavailable for selection about this time last year, when he refused to play for Cameroon in the African Cup of Nations. And I remember travelling down to Tottenham, and Albion were duly spanked 4-0. And we missed Nyon on that day because he was unavailable for selection. And I remember the fans, when we weren't able to find out until the teams came out before the match whether he was going to play or not, and he didn't. And at that point, you thought to yourself, God, all of a sudden this guy is a really important player for us. He was playing right back, he was playing left back.
Yeah.
And he was doing a pretty decent job. And so he didn't really, I thought to myself, didn't think much of his signing in the summer.
We're getting into the realms of kind of what are kind of mediocre signings. And I would say he's not a poor signing, Alan Neal. He's not a very good footballer, but he can occupy. I mean, he's actually played centre-half as well, so he's played right across the back for the Albion.
Yeah, he played in the three at the back.
He's shown two things: that he's got a terrific engine and that he hasn't really got a final ball. Which was never a massive problem under Pulis, but probably more so now. I think Nyon's been a good signing. What the problem is, signing sort of at Watford reserves to play, but for
4 million quid now, in this day and age, 4 million quid gets you Alan Nyon.
And the dexterity of it, you know, he's played across lots of positions. And I mean, while you prefer a team that he's not in it, what an advantage it is to have a player on your bench that can come in either half. And what's more, the one thing I'd say for him, and I think he says for a lot of these players on this list, is he's shown himself to have nothing but the ideal personality. He's never appeared to me anything other than completely and utterly committed. So that's kind of to his
credit.
Apart
when he loved rubbing it in the Watford fans' faces when Albion beat them with the Hawthorns last season, which was the only real kind of spark or, you know, ferocity or whatever you want to call it that you've seen of him. Otherwise, he's just a professional that's got on with his job when asked of him. I still think that with Kieran Gibbs and Craig Dawson fit, I still imagine that Nyon becomes nothing other than a squad player.
And I would say, actually, again, this doom and gloom version of this that we've got relegated next year, I'd still be looking. I like Nyon, but I always want him to be a substitute, is what I would say, even Championship Warrior.
So he joins the Robson Kana on the bench.
well, I like him a lot more than I like Robson Connor, yes. So next was an interesting one, and I've got something to say about this. Jake Livermore, so only 117 positive marks and 263 negative ones. So I'm going to say about Jake Livermore, bouncing out of the Southampton game, Lamina would not have looked like that much of a superstar if Jake Livermore was in the Albion team. Jake Livermore is a functioning midfielder that has legs that they can get up and down, that's not going to just let someone kind of dictate the play in front of him. They can run, I'd assume, 10 kilometres a match quite comfortably. Livermore finds himself in the middle of this list, so he's 8th out of 14, so it's slightly lower than he would be. He's been disappointing for Albion, but no, I probably couldn't go beyond that. He's more capable than he's showing in a more talented team.
It's very, very odd, isn't it, that our sole representative in the national squad
doesn't get in our team.
Is a player that I would wager many an Albion fan wouldn't have in their starting 11 with everybody fit. Now, he would have been, as you say, he would have been very, very much an option for Alan Pardew on Saturday had he been available. And people will talk very much, and very rightly, about how he missed Krychowiak.
Yeah.
Greatly missed his engine and also his quality. That's the thing that Livermore doesn't possess. I think that, you know, in terms of passing and creation, I don't think Livermore's there for that.
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think we'll come on to Krychowiak. I think Krychowiak links midfield with the attack.
Livermore's off the ball.
I've never seen him do that. Yeah, I think the thing is, Livermore is functional. So I think it's interesting against Liverpool. They played him wide, didn't they? Wide right. I think it's wide right. And he played all right, and he will play all right. You know, he's not a bad player. The problem is, a bit like Niamh, really, he's not going to. His final ball's not great. No. Isn't that actually, it's odd that he's a midfielder, he's not a very good passer. But but I think games like Southampton show the merit of a player like Livermore. He's not turned out to be a fantastic signing, but I don't think his Albion story is past him, and he's one that I wouldn't be afraid to see in a Championship team.
Yeah.
So in the top half now, we see a massive, massive, massive jump now. So Livermore has 117 positive marks. The next one above him, Matt Phillips, has 465. So we're now into the area of the top seven of good marks. Hmm. Matt Phillips, what are they say to be three times as good a player as Jack Livermore?
Well, again, very much like Neom in a, I suppose, an overachieving team last season, Matt Phillips was a hugely important player.
Yeah.
And God only knows how much we missed him when he got injured and we tailed off a bit towards the end of the season when he couldn't get himself fit. I remember being particularly frustrated with Phillips at the start of last season when he came in and you thought to yourself, okay, he's not a world-class signing, he's not a player that, you know, you're expecting to score 40 goals a season. But I also thought that at the same time we've picked up a player with a bit of pace, what we were missing before that. Got a bit of pace, hopefully a better delivery than most at the club, and okay, that's something I could get behind as a signing. And for the first 3 months, there was nothing there at all.
No.
And he really, really struggled to kind of have any impact in most matches. And all of a sudden, it was like someone just lit the blue touch paper, and he just went off on a crazy run of matches where he scored goals, created goals. And you missed him and he wasn't there.
He's the consummate confidence player, isn't he? He's obviously that's obviously kind of prime too.
Yeah.
He's actually, you know, in the course of my thinking about this, he's a better player than I give him credit for. I mean, he's sort of got everything. I mean, he's shown that he can finish. Yeah, he's cut his delivery from set pieces. He isn't bad. He's a big guy. He gets up and he's not really necessarily lacking for defensive effort. If you know, there's been a lot of beef about him not necessarily giving 100% in that challenge against Southampton. I think he probably deserves his slot there. In fact, maybe he should be higher. Particularly at below £5 million, he's worth an awful lot more than that now. If you think, as a ratio, we bought Livermore for £10 million. He's not worth double that now. Well, I mean, we wouldn't sell for Matt Phillips for less than £10 million now, would we?
No, not very much. James McLean. We want 15 for James McLean. Yeah.
The next one is really interesting, actually, because I don't. Again, it's kind of a
this
of
has
the
swung
moment.
One way that I didn't think it was going to. I thought it would be positive more than negative, but I didn't realise it was going to be such a big swing.
Yeah, Krychowiak is number four. He's got 438 fours and 77 against. I mean,
2 months ago, before that Liverpool game at Anfield.
Yeah.
In the Premier League before Christmas, I think most people had written him off as a as a poor signing, a signing that didn't fit in with generally what Tony Pulis was asking of him.
What did you think of him then?
I'll be honest, I saw precious little of him in the first however many months of the season to suggest that this is a player that was going to walk into our side. And because when he arrived in the summer, it was one to get you excited, wasn't it? It was a real standout signing, much like Swansea and Renato Sanchez and. You know, and like Watford with Gerard Deulofeu, now real standout signing from one of the European's elite clubs. And I thought, wow, this could be along with Gareth Barry in midfield. We've got a new look midfield now, and this could be a real coup, even on loan. And he just never really got going.
Yeah,
it took him a long time to obviously win a game. He didn't win a league game until the Brighton game. He's only won one. The only one he's won since. So.
I don't know if I'm being crazily optimistic. I don't go routinely away with Albion. I haven't seen him play badly many times. I've seen one or two games where I feel like he didn't have the pace to stay up with it.
Yeah.
But actually, largely, I felt he sort of played well. I feel like he was let down. But I mean, Pulis just kept playing that same three, which was the best three. You know, Livermore, Barry, and Kukowski. He just never managed to kind of get the balance. I mean, he certainly had some. One or two really very good games under Pardew, you know, obviously Liverpool, where I love this thing where he'll be under pressure and he'll just break from midfield and all of a sudden there's a wave, and I love that.
And he did that, and he said it when Rodriguez scored that second goal at Anfield in the FA Cup last week. His part in that goal for Gibbs's cross in the build-up was phenomenal, and he was outstanding that day. It was comfortably his best performance in an Albion shirt. At Anfield.
I think it's an interesting balance. He's been ranked as a better signing than Phillips, who cost us £5 million, and he's costing us what is probably £8 million in wages for a season. It's interesting, but I am a Krakowiak fan. So we're into the top five now.
Yep.
Okay. In at five is Darren Sturridge. Daniel Sturridge.
Yeah. I think you've just named every other. I mean, you've got Dean, you've got Simon. Now, yes. Now we've got Darren.
Why isn't there a Darren Sturridge?
There probably is.
Daniel Sturridge. We can't talk too long about Darren Sturridge, but we've both waxed lyrical that we're thrilled that we signed him.
He's, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The 454 people that have given him a four vote, as opposed to the 29 that gave him a vote against, that's got to be based on reputation, hasn't it? It's Daniel Sturridge. It's a wow signing, very similar to Krakowiak. It's a signing that two or three years ago, I'm not sure West Bromwich Albion would have been capable of pulling off.
Yeah.
And of course he's moved geographically. It's a good thing for him. Regular football is a guarantee. He obviously still needs to hit the ground running. We are in desperate need of a goal source, and a lot of responsibility will rest on his shoulders. But you can't fail to get excited by the signing.
No, two things briefly. I agree with all the things you said there. That firstly, he's a good signing that it showed Albion were able to attract a player of his stature. Mostly, I can understand why people ranked him so high, because we so crucially needed him. I mean, he's literally, for me, he's the only hope of our staying up now. Sturridge needs to score
7 or 8 goals. Really.
Yes, that's the only way we're staying up now. So Sturridge at five. So we're into top four now. In at four, Gareth Barry.
Gary Barry. Well, interestingly, actually, ever since Krakowiak in this list, the top six, they've all arrived this season. So, you know, it would suggest that these guys down here at the bottom are, you know, kind of. It's very much, in terms of personnel, we've seen an upgrade this season.
Or, yeah, I mean, I think there can be a tendency to prefer more recent signings. Yep. But, yeah, that's
number right. Four, Gareth Barry, four shy of 500 positive votes, which I think that's fair enough. I've been pleased with what Gareth Barry's produced this season for Albion generally. I've also not been particularly surprised by what he's produced. He's a high quality midfielder. He's obviously had his best years. He wasn't ever going to get any better at Albion than what he's produced for Aston Villa, Everton, or whoever else in the past. But you know, how old is he now? 36, is he?
Yeah,
maybe going to be 37. So. Yeah, he's generally speaking, he's been a very, very decent signing, and on a 1-year deal, I couldn't argue with that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure whether this year comes round. It depends, of course, what division we're in.
But I would say it's been a reasonable signing. I think for the sake of continuity, so again, we're looking at kind of assessing Nicky Hammond here. At the moment, we've got a central midfield pairing that neither of which will probably start next year. It's you have to look at these things in the round, and I wonder whether or not Gareth Barrett signing a player this ageing next to a player that won't be there next year is necessarily the smartest thing. But I mean, in truth, yeah. Barry is 7 out of 10 most weeks. I don't know if you agree. He started to look really slow in a couple of games.
Well, I mean, I was going to just talk to you about that actually, because I gave him a 5 on Saturday because I thought, well, I mean, Albion's midfield generally struggled, and you could tell that very much like Jakob in a 2, people rightfully pointed out that Jakob needs to really play in a 3.
Yeah,
and the same can be said for Barry. And
Barry's done all right next to Kukoviak in a 2, but
he normally has Brunt or Livermore alongside.
Well, I think the crux of it is Rodriguez.
Yeah,
Rodriguez will flip into that role.
That was confusing. I totally get that Pardew was keen to find a place in the team for Sturridge, of course.
Yeah,
but
his reasoning was odd, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure Rodriguez particularly wanted to hear about how he needed to be rested.
No.
Having been on this hot streak that he's been on.
No.
You know, or you rest him in the week against City.
So we're going to go to the top 3. We'll come back in a minute to what would have been our top and bottom. In at 3, Kieran Gibbs, 485 positive, 13 negative. 13 negative, yep, is the lowest.
Again, I mean, for me, I know we were going to talk about it anyway, but for me, he's my number one signing of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
2.5 years. I think that the signing base, bearing in mind that we've kind of almost given up on him coming halfway through the summer transfer window, only to go back and then, you know, snap him up at the very, very end. It was a problem position for Tony Pulis the whole time he was at the club. He had all sorts of players playing there. I mean, James Chest was playing there, Neum, of course. And then you had Chris Brunt, Johnny Evans. They all seemed to just take it in turns to fill a gap that was problematic week on week. And all of a sudden, Kieran Gibbs comes in. He's, you know, mid to late 20s. He's come from Arsenal with huge amounts of Premier League experience. And, you know, he's looked the part in pretty much every week.
Yeah, for me, we'll skip straight to it. He's the number one for me as well. And I mean, he's really surprised me how good he is. I sort of thought he'd be kind of a bit of a white noise sort of a player. It's kind of okay at everything, but actually he's kind of good at everything. He injects a bit of pace into the team. He's always in the right position. He seems like a good personality. He seems like a really kind of calm personality. I think Kieran Gibbs has been a terrific signing, and I mean, one of the great tragedies it were we to get relegated is losing him, because realistically you've got 4 or 5 years. He's not going to go. I don't think he's going to get poached from us. He'd solved a problem almost kind of straight away.
It's a bit like Foster actually. I really don't want to talk about this kind of impending relegation, but you have to, because it's a very real possibility now. And looking ahead to the summer, we talked the other day about Ben Foster, and you know, the fact that he doesn't really need to go anywhere because he's settled in the area. He's always from here. He's not got those England international ambitions anymore, you know. And you could see Ben Foster playing the Championship. Could you see Kieran Gibbs playing the Championship?
No. Kieran Gibbs is arguably too good for Albion in the Premier League.
He is so far away from the England team that's also unfair. You know what I mean? He's behind Danny Rose. He's behind. He's behind Bertrand. But, I mean even Aaron Cresswell, Luke Shaw, Kieran, the left back slot for England is.
Yeah, no, it's really tough. But that, there'll be no shortage of interest in him. Anyone who wants a left back knows that they've got kind of a safe pair of hands here. So up to their top 2 now, and coming in at 2 is Jay Rodriguez, who has 544 positive and 31 negative.
Yes.
Votes. What do you think of Jay Rodriguez?
Again, a very, very solid signing. You could get behind him for £12 million when you consider that the club received £12 million for Berahino 6 months earlier. You thought to yourself, okay, that's in terms of attitude, that poles apart. Rodriguez hasn't scored as many as he probably would have liked in the league. He scored, obviously, against Exeter and Accrington. So if you take those away, and the couple he got against Liverpool, that's 4 league goals. So it's not a silly amount of goals that he's, you know, managed to net this season. And there was a big lull in his season as well. Around the kind of October-November period, where it really, really, you know, Albion really got dragged down, and this winless run was hovering over them all the time, and they couldn't shift it, and of course it cost Tony Pulis his job. And then just after Christmas, he kind of had this rebirth, a bit of a spark, where he found the net, and from there on he's taken his goals really well. The goals at Liverpool were fantastic. The one at Everton was very well taken as well. So ever since, you know, all of a sudden he's become a genuine potent goal threat.
Yeah, so it's fun. I'd like to fly in the faces because I would think that, you know, it's again another one that you'd have probably been sixth or seventh if we did this kind of a month ago, and it's probably of the moment. But What I've really been impressed with Rodrigo, which I've already touched on before, is his tactical play, is the way that he's made sense of the former midfield and transit between one and two, between up front and in midfield. What I would say is that it's probably not the biggest advert for the Hammond regime that he's number two in this list, because he's not a terrific Premier League player. You know, he was kind of fourth or fifth choice at Southampton. He had more kind of prospect than that, but he's not particularly. He's not great at anything, but he's quite good at everything. A bit like I was saying, I expected Kieran Gibbs to be. I think he's a good sign. I think he's doing really well. Pardew's doing really well. But what I would say is, if I'm going to progress to a comfortably mid-table Premier League team, he would probably make way.
I think so.
I don't think he's one of.
I've been actually in the last couple of months. I've been. Particularly pleased that all these games that he's come through, and he hasn't had a recurrence of his injury, because that was a real worry for me this season, that he was a player with, I mean, he was red hot for Southampton before this injury.
Yeah,
3 or 4 years ago he definitely would have gone to Brazil with the World Cup. I've got no doubt in my mind that that would have been the case.
My personal take is, even alone for that, again, a kind of a top 10 side, I think we have a top 10 defence. I think we have a bottom three forward line. And I quite like Rodriguez, but I think two is quite high for this. And I think, again, I think what are you? We've got a two-man strike force. You've got Rondon, who in theory is the player who holds the ball up and knocks it on, etc., etc. And you've got Rodriguez, who's the player that kind of moves around. As it happens, he does this kind of midfield role. He's not exceptional either of those roles as a striker. He's not going to score 20 goals any Premier League season for us, and he's not going to hold the ball up exceptionally well. I'm probably being overly harsh on him here, but I just think Rodriguez is second on this list, and I think he's an okay Premier League player.
Again, it's what 12 million quid gets you these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Hammond needs to be. We should judge it on the investment here. And yeah, how many better Premier League strikers have been signed for less than 12 million?
I think on this list, generally speaking, you can point to players and say, God, that was a hell of a lot of money wasted on him. But you can't really. I mean, there have been a lot of players that you said, well, okay, Alan Leon has been an okay signing at best, but 4 million quid. Robson Kanu. Quite an underwhelming signing, but was a free.
Do you know?
A lot of loan players. Gareth Barry, nominal fee. Gibbs, nominal fee. They've never spent stupid amounts of money.
That's a really interesting point. I'm looking at this list now, and actually,
Ollie Burke, besides.
I was going to say, there's only one player on this list that you would say could be kind of catastrophic financially. I don't think Livermore. I still think Livermore's a £10 million asset to the Albion.
Yep.
Phillips' value has gone up. Nyam isn't worth less than 4 million quid. Robson Kanu, we didn't pay for Chadley. We could sell Chadley for what we bought him for. I think
if they really pushed in the summer, they could have got what they wanted from.
So again, that's probably a positive for this regime. Really, they're not wasting money.
No.
So we should get into number one. At number one, you've probably worked out already. It is Ahmed Hegazi, who has 563 positive and only 18 negative marks.
And
is Ahmed Hegazi?
He is a snip. I mean, really, for 4 million quid, we talk about Neon, but for what Hegazi gives you on a week-to-week basis, it means so much to him to be out there.
Yeah.
I've spoken to a few people who watch Egyptian football regularly about what Ali Gabi is like, to get a bit of a flavour of what we can expect from him when he finally kind of takes to the field. But for Hegazi, you can see the passion and the commitment every single week. He's only scored a couple of goals. They're both headers from corners, the one against Bournemouth on the first game of the season, and the one on Saturday against Southampton. and he celebrates them like he's just won the World Cup.
It's heartwarming. I know exactly what you mean. I mean, it's been imperious for Albion, and that back four I think is terrific. Yeah. And long may
he's got better.
He has got better. At the start of the season, I'd have been saying he's an accident waiting to happen. I am 80% sure. I would now say he's an accident waiting to happen. I'm 30% sure.
Yeah.
I think he's a really good player. Yeah. He's got some capacity.
He's got a few iffy moments in him still.
Yeah, positionally, he can get dragged around a bit, I think, but playing next to Johnny Evans makes a big difference to him. I think he's a really, really good signing. I don't think he's a Kieran Gibbs signing, because I think Kieran Gibbs is a complete and utter sure thing.
Yes. But for example, you see, when it gets started, we haven't had that many opportunities this season to kind of boast about having a lead in a game going into the later stage of the game. But I'll take the Liverpool FA Cup one, for example. He came on for Gibbs, yeah. I think it was, in the first half, who had an injury. Was it? Yeah, it was. And it was just like, I mean, okay, Liverpool don't have a particularly focal point as regards to a number nine, an old-fashioned number nine in their ranks. But they were lumping balls forward. You know, Van Dijk was up there for every set piece. And Hegazi just won everything, and you just thought, when it comes to that, you know, okay, a fleet-footed player might be able to get the better of him on the ground, and Chainlong threatened that a couple of times on Saturday, but when it comes to just seeing out games, he's like that kind of Jonas Olsen, Hegazi, Macaulay kind of player, the height.
Although,
win everything with aerial.
I haven't seen the data, but if I had to guess, and we can look this up after, so forgive us that I don't have this for this podcast, but do you think he wins a massive percentage of his headers?
I'm taking certain situations in.
I know what you're saying about Liverpool, but actually, in general, he's not the most. He's no Macaulay in terms of being a commanding centre off. I wouldn't say.
Well, yeah, it might just be his height that you kind of you look.
Yeah, you don't worry for him. So I'm being churlish here. I mean, I really, really love him, and I think you make the consummate point. Hegazi makes me feel better about watching the Albion. I just love the bloke. I just love his approach, and I think you can almost kind of feel his sort of frustration at these chances in Italy, which were killed by injury, and you know that the fact that he could it may never have happened for him in Europe. So I'm really pleased, and I think so. We keep making this reference as to whether or not Championship, etc. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be one of the best centre halves in the Championship. I would struggle to keep hold of him.
I'd also make a point in saying, do you know? I mean, obviously it wasn't in the transfer window; it was in the closed when the window was closed. I actually think he's got better since his deal was made permanent. It was we're settled here now. The future's clear. This is what I've got to
do. I think if you were to play on a graph, Hegazi gets better every week, which is a good thing. And I think he actually doesn't need to get any better. What he needs to do is show less signs. He needs to get positionally better.
We're talking about a centre-half who's playing for a team at the bottom of the league. Which means you're not winning games of football, which means you're conceding goals.
Yeah.
So that in itself is quite difficult to kind of, just on face value, is quite difficult to make for Hegazi. And yet, look at our goals
teams
conceded.
There's teams
goals
in the top
conceded
half.
That, you know, you look at Stoke and they spent 18, 19 million quid on Kevin Vimmer. Now they beat us to him in the summer, and you know, he's been absolutely atrocious by all accounts. So
I think it's been a terrific success. So I think what we'll do is we'll both name our top and bottom one now, and we'll bottom. Go on to say what we've learnt about Hammond from here. Mm. And while you can take longer over this, so I'll do it quickly. I'd have said my top is Kieran Gibbs. I would have said I think for all the reasons I've said, he's a complete and utter safe bet and an asset that will always be worth more than we've paid.
Yeah.
I've probably changed across the course of this, but I'm going to say bottom is Burke. The reason being that I think you have to measure the success of a signing over a longer period. And I think he's the one that could kind of cost us the most. He's the one for whom the investment would we felt the most. Because if we'd have bought a genuinely £15 million Premier League player at that point, it would have made a big difference to our team.
Yeah.
So it's probably a bit harsh, but I'm going to go. I would have put Burke last.
Well, I hope first. I hope that he kind of comes back to bite us both in the back.
So do I. Yeah, absolutely.
I can't disagree with Kieran Gibbs. He was a signing that I was pleased we managed to conclude when we brought him in the summer, and he's been everything that I expected of him to be for the money as well. It was a real snip, and you know, long may that continue. I've got to say, if you're going down all the way down to the bottom of the list, I can't say Chadley only because of his contribution at the start of last season. It would go down to one of the two low knees. They just both just smacked to desperation. Mark Wilson and Brendan Galloway. But I actually say Galloway because I thought Wilson in the short time that he was involved in matches looked okay at Albion. Never anything more than okay. And I wasn't too bothered when he didn't get a permanent deal. But Galloway is now... He's struggling to get in the Sunderland side, yeah, and you wonder where he's...
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but don't you think Pulis did for Galloway rather than... I don't think Galloway was so much a bad signing. Is he? Was he badly managed? I'm already hating myself for this. I've said Burke. It's Burke or Robson-Kanu for me. Robson-Kanu was never going to be a good signing. We've had several of these. Robson-Kanu couldn't have succeeded at Albion in the same way as Samaras couldn't have succeeded at Albion. I might have changed my mind. I think Burke would be the one that's most costly. I think Robson-Kanu was the worst signing because it was a bit brainless. So there's that. So it's all right. So we've gone through it, and actually it's interesting. I think I might have slightly changed my mind on this regime across the course of it. Because I think when you look at it again, I think if you look at the financial fair play and so on, you know, I think there's some players here. When we look through it, that point we made that Burke's the only one that's probably got a significantly lower value than the one we bought him for. I think we pay a lot of wages, so that's has to be borne in mind. But I think what actually this shows is we haven't made that many bad signings under Hammond. What we haven't made is that many exceptional ones.
I mean, you compare that to 2014 when it was being conducted in the kind of the foreign market, and Sebastian Blanco, they just seem to pluck him out of thin air.
Yeah, I think you've got to give that
Jason Davidson thin air.
You've got to give that context, haven't you? Really, that of the kind of barren wasteland that was our team before that. Yeah, do you know? I don't know if you've. This has made me feel slightly more.
Yeah,
I think Hammond gets a bad rap. I said before. I think the ghost of Dan Ashworth looms large over him. But I mean, actually, I think looking at this, I don't know if you're great. He hasn't recruited that badly.
Even the summer before he came in, James Chester. A failure, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Ricky Lambert, failure.
Yeah.
Anders Lindegaard, I mean, hey?
Lambert was another one, I think.
James McLean, he's been okay as a squad player, but he's not been outstanding.
Nope.
Brought Rondon in, of course. I mean, yeah. They haven't stuck. Johnny Evans is the one that stands out, of course.
I think the quality of signing's gone up this year. I think all those people you listed then, there was no one as good as Gibbs, no one as good as Higazi, no one as good as Sturridge. I think the difference this year is there's nothing like being lucky with injuries, and I think, you know,
we've had it in the past. We've had the luck with injuries, particularly last season when we went on our hot streaks, and James Morrison was playing a big part. McCauley, at the age that he was managed perfectly.
Yeah.
He was playing every week. We don't have that at the moment.
McCauley was always going to blow up. Really.
Yeah, and it's a real shame.
So I think. Speaking for myself, having gone through all this, I highly doubt Nicky Hammond is listening, but if he is, I don't think you're actually doing too bad a job. I think looking through this, I can only list one or two that are dreadful, and I think some of these that have probably paid the price for being
worth playing for more than anything. The other thing is, as well, of course, is the summer window. We seem to say it every year, but I'd say the summer window coming up now really is. It's an era defining one because...
Yeah. Actually, whatever
you've
division
got you've got McCauley, you've got Morrison, Brunt's out of contract as well.
Barry, Kukowiak.
What happens with Evans? You might have to start again, regardless of what division we're in.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility we'll lose our entire back four. It's not.
Apart from Higazi, but he signed up.
Well, but I mean, he's going to be a man in demand. I'd like to think we'll keep Higazi and so on. But
God, it doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
Yeah, that's probably a conversation for another day.
Nicky Hammond to think about.
What for those of you that we still have, if I can say, Dave Challoner, who is a friend of Woodman Corner and who is Baggy Bird, is arranging a special football day at Halesow in town on Sunday the 29th of April. There's going to be a mascot match. It's going to be really, really, really great. Mascots from all around the country coming down to play there. There's also going to be an all-star game, and there's a team that's being put together at the moment by other friend of Woodman Corner, Andy Johnson. Mm. All the money goes towards Richard Eads, who all of you will know as Albie. The fellow mascot, towards his family. I spoke to Dave about this. He really wants to give them a year to remember after going through such a tragedy. It's going to be £5 a ticket, Sunday, April the 29th. We'll be coming back to you with more details about tickets and so on, but that sounds like a good day, doesn't it, Joe?
It does indeed, yeah. It's all for a wonderful cause as well, of course, and it's going to be a really, really good line-up and a group of people to remember a very, very special figure.
Absolutely.
In the Albion community.
So thank you for joining us today on Woodburn Corner. As I always say, if you like it, let us know why. If you don't like it, get in touch and help us make it better. But we appreciate your joining us. Hopefully we'll have some better scores to talk about in times to come. In the meantime, all the best.